Chapter 2. The Welcome. The halls of Faldara Keep, their smooth stone walls sparsely decorated with elegantly simple tapestries and painted screens, bustled with news of the Ammerlin Seat's imminent arrival. Servants in black and gold darted about their tasks, running to prepare rooms or carry orders to the kitchens, moaning that they could not have everything ready for so great a personage when they had had no warning. Dark-eyed warriors, their heads shaven except for a topknot, bound with a leather cord, did not run, but haste filled their steps, and their faces shone with an excitement normally reserved for battle. Some of the men spoke as Rand hurried past.
Ah, there you are, Randalthor. Peace favor your sword. On your way to clean up? You'll want to look your best when you're presented to the Ammerlin Seat. She'll want to see you and your two friends as well as the women. You can count on it.
He trotted toward the broad stairs, wide enough for 20 men abreast, that led up to the men's apartments.
The Ammerlin herself, come with no more warning than a pack peddler. Must be because of Moraine Sedai and you southerners, eh? What else?
The wide, iron-bound doors of the men's apartments stood open and half-jammed with top-knotted men buzzing with the Ammerlin's arrival.
Ho, Southlander! The Ammerlin's here! Come for you and your friends, I suppose. Peace, what honor for you. She seldom leaves Tarvalen, and she's never come to the Borderlands in my memory.
He fended them all off with a few words. He had to wash, find a clean shirt, no time to talk. They thought they understood and let him go. Not a one of them knew a thing except that he and his friends traveled in company with an Aes Sedai, that two of his friends were women who were going to Tarvalen to train as Aes Sedai, but their words stabbed at him as if they knew everything.
She's come for me.
He dashed through the men's apartments, darted into the room he shared with Matt and Perrin, and froze, his jaw dropping in astonishment. The room was filled with women wearing the black and gold, all working purposefully. It was not a big room, and its windows, a pair of tall, narrow arrow slits looking down on one of the inner courtyards, did nothing to make it seem larger. Three beds on black and white tiled platforms, each with a chest at the foot, three plain chairs, a washstand by the door, and a tall, wide wardrobe crowded the room. The eight women in there seemed like fish in a basket. The women barely glanced at him and went right on clearing his clothes, and Matt and Perrin's, out of the wardrobe and replacing them with new. Anything found in the pockets was put atop the chests, and the old clothes were bundled up carelessly like rags.
What are you doing? He demanded when he caught his breath. Those are my clothes.
One of the women sniffed and poked a finger through a tear in the sleeve of his only coat, then added it to the pile on the floor. Another, a black-haired woman with a big ring of keys at her waist, set her eyes on him. That was Elansu, Shatayan of the Keep. He thought of the sharp-faced woman as a housekeeper, though the house she kept was a fortress and scores of servants did her bidding.
Moraine Sedai said all of your clothes are worn out, and the Lady Amalisa had new made to give you. Just keep out of our way, she added firmly, and we will be done the quicker.
There were a few men the Shatayan could not bully into doing as she wished. Some said even Lord Aglmar, and she plainly did not expect any trouble with one man young enough to be her son. He swallowed what he had been going to say. There was no time for arguing. The Ammerlin Seat could be sending for him at any minute.
Honor to the Lady Amalisa for her gift, he managed, after the Shinaran way. And honor to you, Elansu Shatayan. Please convey my words to the Lady Amalisa, and tell her I said, heart and soul to serve.
That ought to satisfy the Shinaran love of ceremony for both women.
But now, if you'll pardon me, I want to change.
That is well,
Elansu said comfortably.
Moraine Sedai said to remove all the old, every stitch. Small clothes, too.
Several of the women eyed him sideways. None of them made a move toward the door. He bit his cheek to keep from laughing hysterically. Many ways were different in Shinar from what he was used to, and there were some to which he would never become accustomed if he lived forever. He had taken to bathing in the small hours of the morning, when the big, tiled pools were empty of people, after he discovered that at any other time a woman might climb into the water with him. It could be a scullion or the Lady Amalisa, Lord Aglmar's sister herself. The baths were one place in Shinar where there was no rank. Expecting him to scrub her back in return for the same favor, asking him why his face was so red, had he taken too much sun?
They had soon learned to recognize his blushes for what they were, and not a woman in the keep but seemed fascinated by them. I might be dead or worse in another hour, and they're waiting to see me blush. He cleared his throat. If you'll wait outside, I'll pass the rest out to you. On my honor. One of the women gave a soft chortle, and even Elansu's lips twitched, but the Shatayan nodded and directed the other women to gather up the bundles they had made. She was the last to leave, and she paused in the doorway to add,
The boots, too. Moraine Sadai said everything.
He opened his mouth, then closed it again. His boots, at least, were certainly still good, made by Alwyn Alvan, the cobbler back in Emmons Field, and well broken in and comfortable. But if giving up his boots would make the Shatayan leave him alone so he could go, he would give her the boots and anything else she wanted. He had no time.
Yes, yes, of course. On my honor.
He pushed on the door, forcing her out. Alone, he dropped onto his bed to tug off his boots. They were still good, a little worn, the leather cracked here and there, but still wearable and well broken in to fit his feet. Then hastily stripped off, piling everything atop the boots, and washed at the basin just as quickly. The water was cold. The water was always cold in the men's apartments. The wardrobe had three wide doors carved in the simple Shinaran manner, suggesting more than showing a series of waterfalls and rocky pools. Pulling open the center door, he stared for a moment at what had replaced the few garments he had brought with him. A dozen high-collared coats of the finest wool, and as well-cut as any he had ever seen on a merchant's back or a lord's, most embroidered like feast-day clothes. A dozen. Three shirts for every coat. Both linen and silk, with wide sleeves and tight cuffs. Two cloaks. Two, when he had made do with one at a time all his life. One cloak was plain, stout wool and dark green, the other deep blue with a stiff standing collar embroidered in gold with herons. And high on the left breast, where a lord would wear his sign, his hand drifted to the cloak of its own accord. As if uncertain what they would feel, his fingers brushed the stitching of a serpent, curled almost into a circle, but a serpent with four legs and a lion's golden mane, scaled in crimson and gold, its feet each tipped with five golden claws. His hand jerked back as if burned.
Light, help me. Was it Amalisa had this made, or Moraine? How many saw it? How many know what it is, what it means? Even one is too many. Burn me, she's trying to get me killed. Bloody Moraine won't even talk to me, but now she's given me bloody fine new clothes to die in.
A rap at the door sent him leaping half out of his skin.
Are you done? Came Elansu's voice. Every stitch now. Perhaps I had better...
A creak as if she were trying the knob. With a start, Rand realized he was still naked.
I'm done, he shouted. Peace! Don't come in.
Hurriedly, he gathered up what he had been wearing, boots and all.
I'll bring them.
Hiding behind the door, he opened it just wide enough to shove the bundle into the arms of the Shatayan.
That's everything.
She tried to peer through the gap.
Are you sure? Moraine Sadai said everything. Perhaps I had better just look.
It's everything, he growled. On my honor.
He shouldered the door shut in her face and heard laughter from the other side. Muttering under his breath, he dressed hurriedly. He would not put it past any of them to find some excuse to come bullying in anyway. The gray breeches were snugger than he was used to, but still comfortable, and the shirt with its billowy sleeves was wide enough to satisfy any good wife in Emmons Field on laundry day. The knee-high boots fit as if he had worn them a year. He hoped it was just a good cobbler, and not more Aes Sedai work. All of these clothes would make a pack as big as he was. Yet he had grown used to the comfort of clean shirts again, of not wearing the same breeches day after day until sweat and dirt made them as stiff as his boots, then wearing them still. He took his saddlebags from his chest and stuffed what he could into them, then reluctantly spread the fancy cloak out on the bed and piled a few more shirts and breeches on that. Folded with the dangerous sigil inside and tied with a cord, looped so it could be slung on a shoulder, it looked not much different from the packs he had seen carried by other young men on the road. A peal of trumpets rolled through the arrow slits, trumpets calling the fanfare from outside the walls, trumpets answering from the keep towers. I'll pick out the stitching when I get a chance, he muttered. He had seen women picking out embroidery when they had made a mistake or changed their mind on the pattern, and it did not look very hard. The rest of the clothes, most of them, in fact, he stuffed back into the wardrobe. No need to leave evidence of flight to be found by the first person to poke a head in after he went. Still frowning, he knelt beside his bed. The tiled platforms on which the beds rested were stoves, where a small fire damped down to burn all night could keep the bed warm through the worst night in a Shannaran winter. The nights were still cooler than he was used to this time of year, but blankets were enough for warmth now. Pulling open the firebox door, he took out a bundle he could not leave behind. He was glad Elansu had not thought anyone would keep clothes in there. Setting the bundle atop the blankets, he untied one end and partially unfolded it. A gleeman's cloak turned inside out to hide the hundreds of patches that it covered, patches in every size and color imaginable. The cloak itself was sound enough. The patches were a gleeman's badge. Had been a gleeman's badge. Inside nestled two hard leather cases. The larger held a harp, which he never touched. The harp was never meant for a farmer's clumsy fingers, boy. The other, long and slim, contained the gold and silver chased flute he had used to earn his supper and bed more than once since leaving home. Tom Marilyn had taught him to play that flute before the gleeman died. Rand could never touch it without remembering Tom, with his sharp blue eyes and his long white mustaches, shoving the bundled cloak into his hands and shouting for him to run. And then Tom had to run himself, knives appearing magically in his hands as if he were performing, to face the murderer that was coming to kill them. With a shiver, he redid the bundle. It's all over with. Thinking of the wind on the tower top, he added, strange things happen this close to the Blight. He was not sure he believed it, not the way Lan had apparently meant it. In any case, even without the Amarlin seat, it was past time for him to be gone from Faldara. Shrugging into the coat he had kept out, it was a deep, dark green and made him think of the forests at home, Tam's Westwood farm where he had grown up, and the Waterwood where he had learned to swim. He buckled the Heronmark sword to his waist and hung his quiver, bristling with arrows, on the other side. His unstrung bow stood propped in the corner with mats and perrins, the stave 2 hands taller than he was. He had made it himself since coming to Faldara, and besides him, only Lan and Perrin could draw it. Stuffing his blanket roll and his new cloak through the loops on his bundles, he slung the pair from his left shoulder, tossed his saddlebags atop the cords, and grabbed the bow. Leave the sword arm free, he thought. Make them think I'm dangerous. Maybe somebody will. Cracking the door revealed the hall all but empty. One liveried servant dashed by, but he never so much as glanced at Rand. As soon as the man's rapid footfalls faded, Rand slipped out into the corridor. He tried to walk naturally, casually, but with saddlebags on his shoulder and bundles on his back, he knew he looked like what he was, a man setting out on a journey and not meaning to come back. The trumpets called again, sounding fainter here inside the keep. He had a horse, a tall bay stallion, in the north stable, called the Lord's Stable, close by the Sally Gate that Lord Aglemar used when he went riding. Neither the Lord of Faldara nor any of his family would be riding today, though, and the stable might be empty except for the stable boys. There were 2 ways to reach the Lord's Stable from Rand's room. One would take him all the way around the keep, behind Lord Aglemar's private garden, then down the far side and through the farrier's smithy, likewise certainly empty now, to the stable yard. Time enough that way for orders to be given for a search to start before he reached his horse. The other was far shorter. First across the outer courtyard, or even now the Amarlin seat was arriving, with another dozen or more Aes Sedai. His skin prickled at the thought. He had had more than enough of Aes Sedai for any sane lifetime. 1 was too many. All the stories said it, and he knew it for fact. But he was not surprised when his feet took him toward the outer courtyard. He would never see legendary Tarvalin, he could not afford that risk, now or ever, but he might catch a glimpse of the Amarlin seat before he left. That would be as much as seeing a queen. There can't be anything dangerous in just looking from a distance. I'll keep moving and be gone before she ever knows I was there. He opened a heavy iron-strapped door onto the outer courtyard and stepped out into silence. People forested the guard walk atop every wall. Top-knotted soldiers and liveried servants, and menials still in their muck, all pressed together cheek by jowl, with children sitting on shoulders to look over their elders' heads or squeezing in to peer around waists and knees. Every archer's balcony was packed like a barrel of apples, and faces even showed in the narrow arrow slits in the walls. A thick mass of people bordered the courtyard like another wall. And all of them watched and waited in silence. He pushed his way along the wall, in front of the smithies and Fletcher's stalls that lined the court. Faldara was a fortress, not a palace, despite its size and grim grandeur, and everything about it served that end. Apologizing quietly to the people he jostled. Some looked around with a frown, and a few gave a second stare to his saddlebags and bundles, but none broke the silence. Most did not even bother to look at who had bumped past them. He could easily see over the heads of most of them, enough to make out clearly what was going on in the courtyard. Just inside the main gate, a line of men stood beside their horses, 16 of them. No two wore the same kind of armor or carried the same sort of sword, and none looked like Lan, but Rand did not doubt they were warders. Round faces, square faces, long faces, narrow faces, they all had the look as if they saw things other men did not see, heard things other men did not hear. Standing at their ease, they looked as deadly as a pack of wolves. Only one other thing about them was alike. One and all, they wore the color-shifting cloak he had first seen on Lan, the cloak that often seemed to fade into whatever was behind it. It did not make for easy watching or a still stomach, so many men in those cloaks. A dozen paces in front of the warders, a row of women stood by their horses' heads, the cowls of their cloaks thrown back. He could count them now. 14. 14 Aes Sedai. They must be. Tall and short, slender and plump, dark and fair, hair cut short or long, hanging loose down their backs or braided. Their clothes were as different as the warders were, in as many cuts and colors as there were women. Yet they, too, had a sameness, one that was only obvious when they stood together like this. To a woman, they seemed ageless. From this distance, he would have called them all young, but closer he knew they would be like Moraine. Young-seeming, yet not. Smooth-skinned, but with faces too mature for youth, eyes too knowing.
Closer? Fool? I'm too close already. Burn me, I should have gone the long way.
He pressed on toward his goal, another iron-bound door at the far end of the court, but he could not stop looking. Calmly, the Aes Sedai ignored the onlookers and kept their attention on the curtained palanquin, now in the center of the courtyard. The horses bearing it held as still as if ostlers stood at their harness, but there was only one tall woman beside the palanquin, her face an Aes Sedai's face, and she paid no mind to the horses. The staff she held upright before her with both hands was as tall as she, the gilded flame capping it standing above her eyes. Lord Aglamar faced the palanquin from the far end of the court, bluff and square and face unreadable. His high-collared coat of dark blue bore the three running red foxes of the House of Jagad, as well as the stooping black hawk of Shinar. Beside him stood Ronan, age-withered but still tall. Three foxes carved from red avatine topped the tall staff the Shambayan bore. Ronan was Elansu's equal in ordering the keep, Shambayan and Shatayan, but Elansu left little for him except ceremonies and acting as Lord Aglamar's secretary. Both men's topknots were snow-white. All of them, the warders, the Aes Sedai, the Lord of Faldara, and his Shambayan, stood as still as stone. The watching crowd seemed to hold its breath. Despite himself, Rand slowed. Suddenly Ronan rapped his staff loudly three times in the broad paving stones, calling into the silence,
"Who comes here? Who comes here? Who comes here?"
The woman beside the palanquin tapped her staff three times in reply.
"The Watcher of the Seals, the Flame of Tarvalin, the Amarlin's Seat."
"Why should we watch?" Ronan demanded.
"For the hope of humankind," the tall woman replied.
"Against what do we guard?"
"The shadow at noon."
"How long shall we guard?"
from rising sun to rising sun, so long as the wheel of time turns.
Aglamar bowed, his white topknot stirring in the breeze.
Haldara offers bread and salt and welcome. Welcome is the Ammerland seat to Faldara, for here is the watch kept, here is the pact maintained. Welcome.
The tall woman drew back the curtain of the palanquin, and the Ammerland seat stepped out. Dark-haired, ageless as all Aes Sedai were ageless, she ran her eyes over the assembled watchers as she straightened. Rand flinched when her gaze crossed him. He felt as if he had been touched, but her eyes passed on and came to rest on Lord Aglamar. A liveried servant knelt at her side with folded towels, steam still rising, on a silver tray. Formerly, she wiped her hands and patted her face with a damp cloth.
I offer thanks for your welcome, my son. May the light illumine House Jagad. May the light illumine Faldara and all her people.
Aglamar bowed again.
You honor us, mother.
It did not sound odd, her calling him son or him calling her mother, though comparing her smooth cheeks to his craggy face made him seem more like her father or even grandfather. She had a presence that more than matched his.
House Jagad is yours. Faldara is yours.
Cheers rose on every side, crashing against the walls of the keep like breaking waves. Shivering, Rand hurried toward the door to safety, careless of whom he bumped into now.
Just your bloody imagination. She doesn't even know who you are. Not yet. Blood and ashes if she did.
He did not want to think of what would have happened if she knew who he was, what he was. What would happen when she finally found out? He wondered if she had had anything to do with the wind atop the tower. Aes Sedai could do things like that. When he pushed through that door and slammed it shut behind him, muting the roar of welcome that still shook the courtyard, he heaved a relieved sigh. The halls here were as empty as the others had been, and he all but ran. Out across a smaller courtyard with the fountain splashing in the center, down yet another corridor, and out into the flagstone stable yard. The Lord's stable itself, built into the wall of the keep, stood tall and long, with big windows here inside the walls, and horses kept on two floors. The smithy across the courtyard stood silent, the farrier and his helpers gone to see the welcome. Tima, the leathery-faced head groom, met him at the wide doors with a deep bow, touching his forehead and then his heart.
Spirit and heart to serve you, my lord. How may Tima serve, my lord?
No warrior's topknot here. Tima's hair sat on his head like an inverted gray bowl. Rand sighed.
For the 100th time, Tima, I am not a lord.
As my lord wishes.
The groom's bow was even lower this time. It was his name that caused the problem, and a similarity. Randall Thor, Alan Mandragoran. For Lan, according to the custom of Malkir, the royal Al, named him king, though he never used it himself. For Rand, Al was just a part of his name, though he heard that once, long ago, before the Two Rivers was called the Two Rivers, it had meant son of. Some of the servants in Faldara Keep, though, had taken it to mean he was a king too, or at least a prince. All of his argument to the contrary had only managed to demote him to lord. At least he thought it had. He had never seen quite so much bowing and scraping, even with Lord Aglamar. I need red saddle, Tima. He knew better than to offer to do it himself. Tima would not let Rand soil his hands. I thought I'd spend a few days seeing the country around the town. Once he was on the big bay stallion's back, a few days would see him at the River Aranin, or across the border into Arafel. They'll never find me then. The groom bent himself almost double and stayed bent.
Forgive, my lord, he whispered hoarsely. Forgive. But Tima cannot obey.
Flushing with embarrassment, Rand took an anxious look around. There was no one else in sight, then grabbed the man's shoulder and pulled him upright. He might not be able to stop Tima and a few others from acting like this, but he could try to stop anyone else from seeing it.
Why not, Tima? Tima, look at me, please. Why not? It is commanded, my lord,
Tima said, still whispering. He kept dropping his eyes, not afraid, but ashamed that he could not do what Rand asked. Shinarans took shame the way other people took being branded a thief.
No horse may leave this stable until the order is changed. Nor any stable in the keep, my lord.
Rand had his mouth open to tell the man it was all right, but instead he licked his lips.
No horse from any stable?
Yes, my lord. The order came down only a short time ago. Only moments.
Tima's voice picked up strength.
All the gates are closed as well, my lord. None may enter or leave without permission. Not even the city patrol, so Tima has been told.
Rand swallowed hard, but it did not lessen the feeling of fingers clutching his windpipe.
The order, Tima. It came from Lord Agomar?
Of course, my lord. Who else? Lord Agomar did not speak the command to Tima, of course, nor even to the man who did speak it to Tima, but, my lord, who else could give such a command in Faldara?
Who else?
Rand jumped as the biggest bell in the keep bell tower let out a sonorous peal. The other bells joined in, then bells from the town.
If Tima may be bold, the groom called above the reverberations, my lord must be very happy.
Rand had to shout back to be heard.
Happy? Why? The welcome is finished, my lord.
Tima's gesture took in the bell tower.
The Amarlin seat will be sending for my lord and my lord's friends to come to her now.
Rand broke into a run. He just had time to see the surprise on Tima's face, and then he was gone. He did not care what Tima thought.
She will be sending for me now.